அருணாச்சல பக்த பகவத் பர்த் சென்டினரி 1912-2012 100 இயர்ஸ் அகோ ஆன் 8th ஆஃப் நவம்பர் 1912 பகவத் பிரசாத் சிங் வாஸ் பார்ன் இன் ஏ ரிமோட் வில்லேஜ் ஆஃப் பிஹார் இந்தியா. ஹிஸ் ஆஸ்பிரேஷன்ஸ் ஃபார் லேர்னிங் ஃபார் இந்தியாஸ் இண்டிபெண்டன்ஸ் ஃப்ரம் த பிரிட்டிஷ் ஃபார் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் அட்டைன்மெண்ட் அண்ட் ஃபார் கம்ப்ளீட் சரண்டர் அண்ட் டெடிக்கேஷன் டு ஹிஸ் மாஸ்டர் அண்ட் லார்ட் பகவான் ஸ்ரீரமண மகரிஷி were the catalyst that propelled his idealistic life forward in India and America, where his work ended. His lifeless body lay prostrate before the shrine of his guru, Sri Ramana, in New York City on the morning of 10th of April 2000. Bhagavat was the founder of Arunachala Ashrama in the West, and the indelible memories of his life and his friendship continued to inspire all who knew him. Throughout his long life, Bhagavat Prasad Singh was firmly rooted in his village, in the land of Mithila, where Sita, the consort of Rama, was born. He wrote, "My mother, Srimati Panchadevi, and father, Sriman Girivar Roy, although literate, were a very religious and God-fearing couple. I was their youngest child and was brought up in the hope of being given a formal education so that I might be able to read and recite the religious epic poem Ramayana of Goswami Tulsidas, the immortal poet saint of the Hindi language. Thus, my Lord, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi, inspired my parents to name me Bhagavat, a devotee of the Lord, and to put me under the care of the village teacher so that I might read and learn about the world. From my earliest childhood, I remember being given to contemplation and very serious and deep conversation. That is why the villagers often called me an old man in the body of a child, and I can picture myself as I used to go about the village with a serious countenance and deep purpose. My village was in the backwoods, devoid of even a place of worship. India is a land of God-intoxicated people, and it is very strange that this village could not even build a temple for its residents. To reach my village, one had to make a great effort. No road led to it, and all of us had to walk through fields, farms, floodwaters, and sun-baked lands, and there was every likelihood of losing one's way in the night. Even before reaching the age of 10, Bhagavat became active in the non-cooperation movement of Mahatma Gandhi. This may have disconcerted his elders, but Bhagavat was an incorrigible idealist right from his youth. Any high ideal outside the normal pursuits of life invariably attracted him, captivated his heart and mind, and he would throw his whole being into it with the utmost sincerity and intensity. It happened again when he read the life of Gautama Buddha in upper primary school. As a teenager, his motto became national liberation and self-realization, and his zeal for India's independence landed him in prison when he was only 17 years old. Though his education had been interrupted, and in spite of financial difficulties, Bhagavat's family was determined to send him for higher studies. After his release from jail, he completed his high school in Calcutta, then attended the Varanasi Hindu University, and finally completed his BA at Patna University in Bihar. He then took employment as a teacher in a Hindi school in Darjeeling, a Himalayan hill station. It was here, about a month before his 29th birthday, that he first read the Hindi version of A Search in Secret India. The moment his eyes fell on the photo of Sri Maharishi, he wanted to fly through the air to his abode at Arunachala. He writes, "Near around the 10th of October 1941, I received the book Gupt Bharat Ki Khoj, a Hindi translation of Paul Brenton's book, A Search in Secret India. I did not know about the book, but had simply come across an advertisement of it in a Hindi magazine. I must have been drawn towards it because it contained the stories of the seers and sages of India. From the moment the book landed in my hands, I was glued to it, and on finishing it, decided to go down to South India to have darshan of Bhagavan Ramana. I was also at that time instinctively drawn towards astrology and was very much impressed with the description in the chapter written in the stars. As it turned out, I went to Ujjain to learn astrology instead of going to Arunachala for Bhagavan's darshan. Although I spent some time in Ujjain and applied myself to astrology, I never wavered in my devotion to Bhagavan Ramana and tried my best to draw the attention of my teacher to the wonderful sage who was radiating his grace from Arunachala. With my mind's eye, I saw Bhagavan sitting in Arunachala and looking at me. He was pouring his grace on me, but he did not make it possible for me to go to him. Instead, I pursued the study of astrology. Because the British considered Darjeeling a security sensitive area, Bhagavat was not permitted to return there to teach. The authorities had discovered his record of political activity and imprisonment. He then channeled his energy into Gandhi's Quit India movement. But being hard-pressed for income, he took several jobs as a journalist with newspapers in Ujjain and Calcutta. As an idealist, the American independence movement of the 18th century and the purest forms of American democratic ideology always inspired Bhagavan. A longing in his heart arose to travel to the new world, even though he had no contacts in the West or financial means to make the journey. He somehow intuitively felt his future was linked to America, and no one could dissuade him from this apparently impracticable dream. Only his sister encouraged him by saying, "I do not know where you will find the money to go to America or how you will do it, but you are so intent on going, so sincere in your desire, I believe God will make it possible for you to go." And he did go in 1947, the very year India attained independence. He received a fellowship from the University of Iowa, and a sympathetic friend arranged to lend him the money to make the ocean journey. After 2 years in Iowa, he received a master's degree in journalism and began a job as the information officer at the Indian Embassy in Washington, D.C. In accordance with the prevailing custom in India at that time, Bhagavat had been betrothed to marry Yogamaya Devi when he was just a boy of 17. She was only 8 at that time. Because of his constant moving about for education and to earn an income during his early years, he was unable to stay with her for any appreciable length of time. She joined him in the US only in 1952. They gave birth to their first child in 1953. It was the following year that Bhagavat experienced a dramatic surge in his inner life. He writes, "On Wednesday, 13th of October 1954, I was in the guest cottage of a Quaker couple, Helen and Albert Bailey, Jr., located on their farm in Westchester, Pennsylvania. The cottage was situated in a valley near their residence. On the second floor of the cottage, my wife, Yogamaya, our 15-month-old boy, and I were occupying the large wooden framed bed that night. In the second half of the night, I saw Bhagavan Ramana sitting on the bed near my head. Although this was a dream, I saw it as clearly as I see the sun during the day and remember it vividly. His famous figure was near my head and his legs were dangling. Arunachala Shiva, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi, stayed near my head for quite a while so that I could drink deep in him. Bhagavan simply kept on looking at me and I was filled with joy and happiness and could not turn my eyes away from him. I do not know how long this lasted, but once I woke up, I could not return to sleep and sat on the bed meditating on him. All morning and day, I kept on thinking of the darshan Bhagavan had given me in my dream. That dream enabled the sugar doll to be dissolved into the divine ocean of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi. Since then, I have not been the same Bhagavad I used to be. The following night, he had another stirring dream wherein he saw the Sanskrit word Upanishad written on a loose leaf. The leaves of Sanskrit text began to turn one by one until he woke. These experiences rekindled the fire of devotion to Bhagavan Ramana that had first been lit in 1941. Daudi Maharishi had left his body 4 years earlier on 14th of April 1950. Bhagavad began writing letters to him at Sri Ramanashramam as he was beginning to experience him as a living presence. On an invitation to teach in Iowa, Bhagavad resigned from the Indian embassy in 1957. Ultimately, the teaching position did not materialize and he was forced to look elsewhere for employment. He thought he might teach somewhere in a US college, write books and travel. But no promising offers came. Inwardly, he felt that his master, Sri Ramana, was removing all worldly ambitions from his mind and was steadily pulling him deeper into his spiritual center for sustenance. In 1959, Bhagavad, with his family, returned to India. Now, he was able to fulfill his long-cherished dream of visiting Sri Ramanashramam in Tiruvannamalai. We returned to India in February 1959. We lived in my village and the world of cold, corrugated cement and concrete was replaced by the village life. We were completely destitute in the true sense of the term. It was a very trying period for all of us, but the grace of Bhagavan kept surging inside me and was the main sustenance of my life. The desire for the darshan of Arunachala Ramana at Sri Ramanashramam remained unquenched within me because I had no money to travel. At about this time, Ram Bahadur, my nephew, was inspired to visit Arunachala and he invited me to accompany him to Sri Ramanashramam in Tiruvannamalai, South India. As soon as we caught the first glimpse of Sri Arunachala, I was swimming in the bliss of Bhagavan. After 19 years, Bhagavan had brought me to his lotus feet. The greatest dream of my life was fulfilled. On 30th of December 1960, Friday morning, Ram Bahadur and I were in Sri Ramanashramam. It was here at Sri Ramanashramam that Arthur Osborne, a staunch devotee, author of several profound books on Bhagavan and founder of the Mountain Path magazine, encouraged Bhagavan to start some regular meetings in the US centered on Sri Maharishi when he returned. Bhagavad did not know for sure at that time he would return, but he did, taking up a position at the Indian Mission to the United Nations in New York City in 1962. In 1965, Bhagavad, reflecting on the recent events of his life, wrote, "Bhagavan made it possible for me to find employment once again in the United States. But New York was the last place where we wanted to live. In spite of my best efforts to get away from New York, Bhagavan held me there. He must have had some purpose in not helping me find employment elsewhere. The purpose would soon reveal itself. On 12th of November 1965, Bhagavat began weekly meetings in a room at the American Buddhist Society on the west side of Manhattan. He wanted it to be a meeting place for sincere aspirants who wished to deepen their spiritual lives in the light of the Maharishi's guidance and grace. In 1966, Arunachala Ashrama, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi's center, was incorporated and registered as a religious charity with the state and federal governments. With the renting of a meeting room at 78 St. Mark's Place in 1967, the weekly meetings became daily. In 1969, the ashrama moved to a rented storefront at 342 East 6th Street near 1st Avenue and remained there for the next 18 years. Bhagavat's dream of a country residential ashrama was realized in 1972 when the Nova Scotia, Canada Arunachala Ashrama was founded at the foot of the rolling hills of the Annapolis Valley. All along, Bhakta Bhagavat would emphasize to all visitors the need for spiritual practice. He would say, "This is Arunachala Abhyasa Ashrama. Abhyasa means spiritual practice." Pointing to Sri Bhagavan's photo, we would often hear him repeat to new visitors, "He teaches and we practice. He has made me his servant and servitor, his doorman and doormat." He was now consumed day and night, dedicating all his time and energy to the ashrama and to the constant remembrance or self-abidance, as he would call it. He behaved like a man possessed, living from moment to moment, acting on whatever inspiration entered his heart. Intuition and inspiration were the only forces now at work in his life. The intellect and self-will lost their hold, and his life began to take its commands from that inner voice spoken by the Lord of his heart. "I wander about like a drunken person who does not care what the world thinks of him. As he is oblivious to the physical world in his inebriated state," he wrote in 1966. Bhagavat was a prolific writer. He would say, "Unless my mind sinks into the heart, I cannot write." And it would sink, and the writing went on and on. All his spare time would be occupied with worshipping at the altar of Hermes 3000 typewriter with the fruits and flowers of my breath. He would be seen either sitting inwardly absorbed in front of the typewriter or outwardly absorbed typing thousands of pages of what he called prayer manuscripts. In 1970, he began writing a piece titled "Bhagavan, Thou Art the Self." This went on for 3,500 pages. "From the top of my voice, I declare to the world that Thou art the very breath for me, and that day and night I find myself immersed in the surging Ganga of the silent sage of the holy hill of the beacon light, Sri Arunachaleshwara, Shiva Bhagavan, Sri Ramana Maharishi." Thus, he writes on the last page in 1973, "While it begin another piece titled Bhagavan, Thou Art My Breath." He would never read what he wrote unless asked to. He would make many carbon copies, and when the Xerox machine hit the market, he was the most diligent of customers. He would ask us to send copies to this or that person, thus fulfilling in his own sincere way the desire to share whatever grace and experience Sri Ramana had blessed him with. Openness of heart was a favorite expression of his. guilelessness, humility. He would often say, "These are the essential qualities of an aspirant." He longed for the pure company of those rare souls who embodied these qualities. He would travel any distance at any time of day or night to benefit from serving and associating with such friends. "I need your company more than you need mine," he would tell us, and he believed it, though we, his friends, certainly thought otherwise. In him, we found a devotee on whom Sri Ramana Maharishi had showered his grace in full measure. He experienced his living presence both within and without. Although, like us, he had never seen Sri Bhagavan in the body, Bhagavat provided us with a living example of how to gain the Master's grace and attain the purpose of human existence in light of the life and teachings of Sri Ramana Maharishi. Bhagavan was a man who could inspire and mold seekers into genuine devotees. In Sri Bhagavan's ashrama, I had never been able to say anything unless I have realized it first in my own life. Those few who could see into his pure heart had little trouble benefiting from his guidance and love. He was a married man with a son. He would never say, "my son," but "our son." Because of his sometimes impractical, idealistic way of life, he regretted that his family had to suffer. When his wife became blind from diabetes, Bhagavat served her with tender kindness and love. During this period, someone once asked him what he was doing with his life. He replied with deep feeling, "I serve mother." She predeceased him by 3 years. Few who had met him during the last 10 years of his life could realize his inner state. He would keep silent most of the time, inwardly absorbed. The heart was everything for him. He would often tell us, "Watch where from the breath rises, it is the heart. Watch where from the sound rises, it is the heart. Watch where from the eye rises, it is the heart." Bhagavat loved books that were divinely inspired, but often had much difficulty reading them. Words from these books are like the keys that open the door to the heart. But once the door of the heart is open, where is the need of a key? He once asked. Sometimes he would pick up one of the Maharishi's books or the Tulsidas Ramayana, read a few passages, put down the book, and resume his absorption in the heart. Occasionally, he would call us at odd hours of the night while in an ecstatic mood. His desire was to somehow convey his state and share it with us, but unable to pull out any words from a mind totally immersed in the ocean of peace and joy. He would remain silent and weep. Only after several minutes of cajoling could we get him to utter a single word. We do not get calls like this anymore. We no longer see the man from the village whose inner luster was hidden from the world by an uncommon simplicity and humility. Bhagavat's intense and unwavering devotion carried him to the heights of inner freedom and joy. We will not see him again, but what he has given his few friends will not be lost either. From his life, we still have much to learn and emulate as we strive to live the life and continue the work he inspired. Sayings of Arunachala Bhakta Bhagavat. "Since my boyhood, I have been on the road. Like a stone that fell into the Narmada River in North India and is washed from shore to shore down the river, rolling and tossing, made smooth and eventually picked up by a storekeeper who sells it to a temple as a lingam or shaligram. So have we been tossed through this world, rolling, tumbling and drifting until finally Sri Bhagavan picked me up and made me his very own. People may see the perfectly smooth and finely shaped lingam and say, 'Oh, look how nice it is. But they do not realize how that stone has been ruthlessly buffeted by the current for many long years before taking the present form. You cannot take a child and pull his legs and arms, stretch them and make the child an adult. Similarly, you cannot make one spiritually mature. All of a sudden, one has to grow naturally. Also, you cannot teach children in first grade higher mathematics or university subjects, just as you cannot instruct immature people in the highest truth. It simply won't sink in. But you cannot look down on a first grader if you happen to be in the ninth grade. All grades are necessary and equally good. When I am quiet, no matter how hard I try, I cannot bring myself to speak. But when I start talking, the river of words flow and I cannot stop. Whatever Sri Bhagavan is giving me, I am giving to you all in silence. Even if you are 500 miles away, it is reaching you. You are receiving it. Many times I want to tell you this or that, but I can't sit you down and tell you to listen to what I have to say. I become frozen. Without a plan, the opportunity arrives and then the words flow. And if I have not experienced it and truly made it my own, I cannot speak of it. The teacher may not know the answer to a particular question, but by the sheer force of the aspirant's sincerity, the correct answer will come out of the teacher automatically. In other words, the teacher's heart opens and it is no less than God speaking. All the spiritual practices, observances, rituals are simply for making the mind one-pointed. If I do not love your mother more than you, my life has no meaning. Words read are like the keys that open the door of the heart. But once the door is open, what need is there for the key? Sometimes, if I simply look at a book, it inspires me and the heart melts and merges. So, if the purpose of reading the book is already achieved, why need I open it? When something is bothering me, a sympathetic friend is the best cure. I have many faults and may do many things wrong, but you should remember the good things. Don't let them all be washed away. For a devotee of God, the positions of the planets, astrology, have no meaning. Faith is the main thing. Sri Bhagavan's teachings are very simple and telegraphic. He says, no efforts ever go in vain. One must believe this and have faith that whatever one does is not in vain. You will get credit for it. When you deposit money in the bank, the money is put into your account and remains there. Similarly, with spiritual practices, if you do not have this faith, you have nothing. Japa, even uttered once, has its own effect, says Bhagavan. Sri Bhagavan says, the greater the intensity when something is done, the sooner the results will be felt. You are all Sri Bhagavan for me. May I be blessed to serve and worship you all for the rest of my life. If you go to a holy place or holy man with reservations and a closed heart, you will get nothing. For example, you see the window there. It is closed. Can you blame the cool air for not coming in? No, you can't. Open the window and the cool air flows in. So, we must open our heart to the saint and only then can he give. People do not understand this. When I plan or turn to the world for assistance, it never works. Only when I turn to Bhagavan is there hope. He is the sole doer. We must have this faith. In all situations, it is not by reasoning or intellectualizing do I understand. Only when the truth flashes in my heart, I come to know. Holy company is a very rare thing in this world. One has it only after great tapas through many lifetimes. As a lotus blossoms with the rising of the sun, so does the holy man's heart blossom on the arrival of a pure and sincere soul. When one becomes more immersed in the self, there is very little left for him in the world. So, as Bhagavan Sri Ramakrishna says, when the mind comes down from samadhi, where will it rest? In the company of pure and noble souls, it must rest. In the same way, I say that with just one true friend around, I have the whole world. Nothing more is needed. Sound is God. Just watch whence the sound arises and abide there. Sound, breath and ego, or I, rise up from the heart and merge into the heart. These songs that I sing are like arrows shot out, piercing into my heart. But now, when I sing, it spreads out like the vast ocean and I become immersed. If you tear open my chest, you will see that you are all enshrined within my heart. When any of you has difficulties, it flashes on my heart right away. If you are well and happy, I feel it also. Whatever visions you may have or whatever siddhis, powers, you may develop mean very little, but the extent to which the person is humble, that is his greatness. To find a true friend in the world is a very rare thing and the greatest wealth. Either we sink or swim together. All of you, my friends, are the fruits of all the struggles and trials in my life.